Obedience to the Unenforceable, Chapter 3. Obedience to the unenforceable is found in awareness. It is acting according to the non-action of effortless wisdom that is conclusively for the benefit of all in every conceivable way. There's nothing whatsoever that needs to be done about anything in order to be aware and wise. Enjoy the ease of your own being as it is, in which nothing need be done and nothing needs to change. However you're living your life and whatever the circumstances of your life may be, they're the perfect circumstances for gaining confidence and awareness. Whatever your perception of your situation may be, that situation is indivisible from awareness. All is known clearly and directly in the awareness that is the basis of everything. The perception called you is a point of view inseparable from awareness, just as the appearance of everything else is a point of view inseparable from awareness. There's no entity or force that can somehow do anything to keep anyone away from awareness. It is simply untrue that there are any obstacles between you and awareness. Please don't worry about all the concepts and the difficult ways of doing things you may have taken on because of obedience to one philosophy or another. If you want to be obedient to the unenforceable. Obedience to the unenforceable. That is the supreme and ultimate obedience and the only real obedience there is. Otherwise, there's obedience to the attempt to sort out and rearrange all our thoughts, emotions, and experiences. When we spend our lives trying to rearrange everything in order to be happy, it is like trying to put together a trillion-piece jigsaw puzzle of the cloudless sky. In other words, nothing will come from it, and the process will be exhausting and frustrating and will never lead anywhere. Now, for many of us, what we've in fact been practicing is obedience to the enforceable, which is the assumption that our thoughts, emotions, and experiences can force us to feel one way or another. Obedience to the enforceable means that we obey our thoughts and emotions according to whatever their label may be. I'll give a personal example of this. I was told that my name was Candace and that I was a girl, so I began practicing obedience to having that name and being that gender. Then other characteristics and qualities were added over time to describe me, and those became my belief systems as well. I was born into a Catholic family, so I started practicing obedience to the idea that I was a Catholic, and that there was a God, and that he needed to be feared. I learned that this absolute being was keeping a scorecard, and on that scorecard were lists of my good and bad attributes. Of course, in my mind, the list for the bad things was much longer, because I could never get rid of the negative side that always seemed to be there. I also learned obedience to other things, like taking myself to be of a certain race, and that I was an American, and that I had a certain type of intelligence and emotional makeup. As I grew older, more and more belief systems were added on: political views, psychology, philosophy, and many others. I practiced obedience to all those things with great fervor until I was in my late 20s, at which point I looked around and just didn't know where to go from there. I had collected so many belief systems in creating my identity that I was dizzied by them all. I finally got into a situation in my life where things started to go in a way I hadn't expected, and I didn't know what to do. The obedience I had to all those belief systems didn't help me at all. I could find nothing in those points of view that could support or sustain me. I looked to one point of view and it wouldn't help. I looked to another and it wouldn't help. In addition to the belief systems, I had even added in a few other antidotes to take the edge off when I needed relief. I would have a drink or smoke marijuana or socialize or immerse myself in work, but none of that helped either. It didn't matter where I sought my solace. At that point in my life, none of the antidotes I'd previously relied on gave any relief whatsoever. When I realized that relief was not to be found in any of these beliefs, I crashed. Suddenly, my life looked completely bleak, and the years ahead didn't look like they would be any better. I got into an extended state of total hopelessness, but in that complete hopelessness and despair, I somehow realized that all of the intense emotions and disturbing states actually had the same underlying basis, a basis that wasn't affected by those emotions. I didn't really have a concept to describe it then, but I knew that when I rested my mind for short moments, repeated many times, I felt the total presence of relief. When any of these inflammatory appearances would emerge, I would rest as the basis from which they had sprung. Over time, the resting became more and more automatic until it was permanent at all times with no division between what appeared and the awareness in which it had appeared. Anyone who becomes totally familiar with awareness as it is being described here says exactly the same thing, namely, that awareness simply is. It's not generated by anything. It is non-produced. It is unborn, it is indescribable, yet it is naturally present. That recognition brings with it the true humility that is the obedience to the unenforceable, which is obedience to the awareness dwelling in every heart. This is not some kind of nihilistic philosophy that says that everything comes from nothing and leads to nothing so we can do whatever we want to do. It isn't that at all. We must act as though our conduct were before the highest judge of awareness. This is very important. Acting as if before the highest judge is another way of expressing obedience to the unenforceable. The appearances are all equal, but that doesn't mean that we merely act according to the appearances. We act in accordance with the underlying principle of unity. We act according to the non-action of effortless wisdom that benefits all in every conceivable way. Question. You are saying that our behavior should be as if standing before the highest judge, but I know very well that often in the past I've not acted in that way. In light of what you're describing, what is the best way for me to make amends for the harm I've caused others? Candace. If we feel guilty about harm we've caused, then through rest we can make a very powerful change. Instead of going into all the stories of guilt and blame, we simply rest as awareness. If we have harmed others, we cannot possibly know what kind of amends need to be made unless we are resting. There are a couple of good ways to make amends with people whom we've harmed through our actions. First, within ourselves, we can say, "I'm truly sorry that I did this," because we've recognized the harm we caused and don't want to repeat it. A very simple and direct action is then to say to the person, "I'm sorry that this occurred, and I promise you it won't happen again." A lot of times in the past, we might have said we were sorry, but then we continued doing the same things over and over again. For example, we might have been perpetually late, and every time we were late, we said we were sorry, but then we persisted in always being late. Rather than carrying on with behaviors for which we have to continually apologize, we should choose to make a direct change. When we make an appointment for a certain time, we arrive at or before the appointed hour. The change we're trying to make may require a very high level of commitment. If we're very serious, we might say, "I vow that I will never do this again, even if my life is in jeopardy." Why won't we ever do it again? Because by the power of sustaining awareness, we naturally want to benefit ourselves and others. That's what our vow is, to rest as awareness and gain mastery over this particular point of view that has caused harm to others. Then when we speak to the other person, we can do so having really looked into this matter very deeply, and we can say with utmost sincerity that we're really sorry this has happened and promise that it won't happen again. We've already decided within ourselves that it's not going to happen again. Therefore, with full confidence, we can promise them it won't happen again. This is really very powerful. You see, resting as awareness means being fully relational. There is nothing to defend against or protect, so these responses come about naturally. We can follow through on our resolve easily and naturally, and we don't need to belabor things at all. When we learn how to make direct changes, we never have to muck around in guilt or blame again. Question. I've been struggling with some negative behaviors that stem from how I was in the past. I find that I sometimes still act inappropriately and do things that harm myself and other people. Candace. When you begin resting, this kind of coarse conduct just gradually gets ironed out, and the edge to everything softens, but the progress is usually gradual. One of the illustrations that has been used traditionally is the potter's wheel. If you're making a clay pot, you pump a pedal with your foot that makes the potter's wheel spin, and even after you stop pumping, the wheel keeps on going for a while before it finally stops. Simply rest for short moments, repeated many times, and allow everything to be as it is. Be filled with the joy and gratitude of having made the choice to relax your perceptions. Resting is such a relief and quite a boon for your life. It's like finding a huge treasure hidden in your house. Imagine having a huge pile of gold but never having been able to recognize it because you didn't know what gold was. You thought you were in poverty, then all of a sudden, when you were able to identify the gold, you realize, wow, I'm very wealthy. The treasure of awareness has never been anywhere else. It is always right here, fully present within all appearances. Question. Guilt and blame about things that have happened seem to loom so large in my life. Could you say something about this? Candace, let's take a little poll on suffering right now. How many people here have felt guilty? All the people in the audience raised their hands. How many people have blamed other people or themselves for their problems? Again, all the hands go up. Okay, so you see, we're all in the same boat. Doesn't it feel good to see that you aren't the only one? When we're only swimming around in our own suffering, then it seems like we must be the only ones who have felt guilty or have blamed ourselves and others. It's important for us to come together and acknowledge how much we have in common. We can suffer terribly for the guilt we feel within ourselves. We may actually feel guilty for things that other people have done to us, and we carry around this incredibly painful guilt all our lives. We feel that we must have done something wrong to make them harm us. This idea of being responsible for the harm someone else has caused is a very big source of hidden guilt in many people. What do we do when we start to see all these points of view? What we can do is to rest as awareness without elaborating on the points of view. Maybe we feel guilty for harm we've caused other people, but we're going to go nowhere in the resolution of that by thinking about it all the time or by harboring intense emotional states related to that thinking. Only in resting when these feelings arise is it possible to go beyond all guilt and blame. Otherwise, our whole life will be based on guilt and blame. Awareness is the essence of our being, but the only way to recognize this is to rest when these viewpoints come up. Many actions of our life may be a playing out of guilt and blame in a strange way that we don't even perceive because we're blind to it. This is one of the important things about the 12 Inquiries teaching of great freedom, which allows us to become familiar enough with our own points of view that we're not blindsided by them anymore. When they come up, we can rest as awareness, and gradually the guilt and blame take on an amusing tone. Instead of their crushing us as if we had Mount Everest on our chest, our lifelong burden of guilt and blame is lifted. Question. Something very harmful was done to me at a young age, and I find it extremely hard to forgive. I don't want to carry the burden of the blame anymore, but I still can't bring myself to forgive the person. Candace. Often we have a thought or a memory that appears involving a hurtful image of something that happened or was done to us, and then maybe the next thought comes up, oh, that was horrible, but I need to forgive. All these are just points of view. It is only in resting as awareness that true forgiveness comes about. I can barely utter the word forgiveness now because there has never been anyone to forgive and there's no one to do the forgiving. All is already forgiven, whatever it is. We can only go beyond the seeming solidity of all the ideas that we have by resting and realizing that they're already undone. They certainly can't be undone through toying around with them. Believing that we have to change our thoughts about another person in order to find a resolution to the situation is a total detour. We've tried all of these things: negotiating, forgiving, rationalizing, justifying, analyzing, and so on. Why not instead go for the ultimate negotiation where there aren't any parties to negotiate? That is the single non-dual expanse of peaceful intelligence and freedom, and it's right here. To play around in the swamp of negotiating and justifying is like getting drunk or stoned. It's just another contrived way of adjusting things that avoids the super completeness of awareness. Just rest in the essence of your own being and let everything be as it is, and you'll know everything that is to be known about everything. Do you want to know a bunch of conventional ideas, or do you want to be able to see as the flawless knower sees? When we ease into the naturally settled reality of our own being, we rest with all these appearances as they arise. Through resting with all the appearances, a complete compassion for others and ourselves comes about. We see the turmoil we've put ourselves through by making up such big stories about everything we think and feel. It's in that kind of compassion for ourselves that we have compassion for other people. True compassion can't come about in any other way. If we make amends or direct changes with another person from complete wisdom and love, we'll know what to do and how to act, which is a far better course than relying on pop psychology, psychiatry, self-help books, cultivating positive behaviors, or anything else. Question. So many negative things have occurred in my life that I feel were beyond my control. I've gotten into a kind of mindset where I expect these negative things to happen, and I find it very difficult to give up this way of thinking. Candace, if we think, certain things have happened to me and things like that are going to keep happening to me, then we're making ourselves a victim of all the points of view we have about ourselves. First, we believe we have a personal identity, and then we believe that the well-being of that personal identity is dependent on certain things. We feel dependent on whether we have a good night's sleep, and whether we have good dreams and no nightmares, or whether our day is filled with pleasant thoughts, emotions, and activities, or whether people treat us in a pleasant manner or not. We subtly or overtly base our well-being on all these things. I always recommend that people simply give up their right to be a victim of their points of view. If we keep it very simple, we can say that at any moment in our lives, we're either choosing to go with our points of view or we are at rest with them. Rather than getting into all these trips about blaming other people, parents, spouses, or negative events, if we just say, "My points of view are my points of view," then there's no one to blame. It's up to us as to how we respond to the contents of our minds. But if we don't want to make that choice and we want to go on with our painful stories, then that's what we choose. In that moment, we've chosen to be a victim of our painful stories, and that's just the way it is. No matter what situation we are in, as long as we are following after points of view, there will be things that we will want to change, and there will be people we like and people we don't like. We will want to get the people we like around us and get the people we don't like away from us. To live in this way means that our life has become a prison. Who made it into a prison? We did. No one else ever makes our life into a prison. It's up to each of us not to become a victim of our thoughts, emotions, and opinions. When we treat our thoughts and emotions as enemies, then we're at war with ourselves, and I think we can all agree that's not a nice situation to be in. If we are able to rest and not be at war with our thoughts and emotions, we'll no longer collapse into this idea of a poor me who is a victim of suffering. In awareness, we realize that we're really free of the perception of suffering, even though suffering appears. This is completely beyond what can be understood through dualistic thinking. Dualistic thinking is based on the idea that either we're suffering or we're not, and that through different strategies, suffering will come to an end. But when we rest as awareness, we find something very different. We find, first of all, that we can be completely free of our mental afflictions, even as they continue to arise. We find that we're more at peace with all of the mental and physical afflictive states that previously caused us so many problems. What was afflictive is no longer afflictive. I didn't say that what was afflictive disappears, or we get rid of it, or it goes somewhere else. When we rest as awareness, we no longer see afflictive states as something that can alter our well-being. That's real freedom. In maintaining unalterable awareness, it becomes more and more obvious to us that what appears in awareness, as it only is awareness, cannot alter that awareness. No matter what appears, it's a vivid appearance of awareness. It doesn't matter whether it's a thought, an emotion, a sensation, a serious bodily illness or injury, or even death. Whatever it is, we know we're going to be okay. Question. I have real difficulties dealing with the problems of everyday life. I get frustrated and angry when things don't go my way. Can you say something about that? Candace. Yes, I can illustrate an extreme example of what you've described. If we've trained ourselves to be uptight and tense, and somebody sideswipes us in our car and directs an obscene gesture at us, well, if we have a gun, we might take it out and start shooting. It doesn't have to be that excessive. There can be a variety of responses to the frustration and anger. We might choose to give the other driver the same obscene gesture, or say something threatening, or we might try to sideswipe him in return. The other extreme might be that we're overwhelmed and we break down crying and pull over on the side of the road. Oh no, not again. Now my car has been damaged. I can't drive it anymore. Boo-hoo, poor me. There's a wide range of responses depending on our own temperament or disposition. We can go from one extreme to the other, from being a total victim to being the perpetrator of further violence and assault. To indulge in either extreme is to do violence to ourselves and potentially to others. We've become tense and uptight by training ourselves to have all these responses. When we rest as awareness, we don't need to be a victim or a perpetrator. We give up all our descriptions about who we've taken ourselves to be, and we get familiar with what's at the basis of it all. In that, we have a much more balanced view, and we can say, wow, look what I've put myself through most of my life. I thought I had to have all these points of view to prove who I am, but I see now that I'd much rather rest. This becomes clearer and clearer. Then we start to see what other people are putting themselves through by believing in all their points of view. We look around at our family members and friends, and we see how much better off they'd be if they were resting as awareness. We're not criticizing, but it's sad to see how people hurt themselves by trying to substantialize their personal identities with points of view. They may not listen to what we have to say about resting as awareness, but that's okay. That's simply the way it is. It's their choice, just like it's our choice. Regarding those who don't want to rest, this isn't an opportunity for position taking or for us to say, I'm resting as awareness and you're not. We know we're maintaining awareness when we can look at everyone with compassionate eyes and we don't have to force our opinions on anybody. That's obedience to the unenforceable.